You're listening to Ryan Anderson's Model Railcast Show with your hosts, Craig Bisgeier and Tim Harrison. We're bringing you the latest news, reviews, and interviews on the hobby of model railroading. The Model Railcast Show, keeping you on the right track.
All right. Oh, Craig, do we still remember how to do this?
What? Who?
My kids came to me and they said some guy named Craig
Bicycle.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, Craig. Come on, guys. I know you're teens, but. And then all of a sudden they were like, I'm like, the guy who came over and helped me with the yard. And they're like, oh, okay.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, he owes me money. Right. Yeah.
the guy who heard people getting married over top.
Right. Or getting destroyed anyway. I wasn't sure.
Something like that.
I only met your kids once.
That's true. But and then you made the impression because they still remember you, Jeff. So.
Mm.
But they remember Craig too. So.
That's good. Nice to be remembered.
Yes. Well, so
depending on what for is another story.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the same for anybody. But Model Railcasters, we're back. It's been a year. We've got some updates for you, Craig. Well, the main reason it's been so long has been I had, as I was talking with you earlier, a rough bout with some health issues.
Get out.
Yeah, let me tell you. There is lots of things that it's good to have high numbers in, money being one of them. But as I found out. Having high numbers in your blood pressure isn't so hot.
Okay. Yeah. Do tell. What happened?
Yes. Well, so, as earlier, you know me. I'm distracted by bright lights and flashy things.
Yeah, you and my wife.
And so I'm at a grocery store, and I see this thing that you can stick your arm in and get your blood pressure checked. And I thought, well, you know, I haven't seen a doctor in some time, and I wonder what my blood pressure is doing. So I went in there to check, and... Jeff, as I told Craig, the numbers came back 211 over 133.
And for those of you who don't know what that means, that's very high.
I have no idea.
Yeah, well, basically...
That's very high. That's like blood should be shooting out of your eyeball.
Pretty much. Those are what I found out from another nurse. Those are like pre-stroke numbers right there.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so...
You overachiever, you.
Yeah, apparently, and so I'm going to blame it on genetics. My old man must have passed that down to me.
Thanks.
And yeah, thanks, Dad. Thanks, I appreciate that. So yeah, I went to spent about a week in the hospital. Them just trying to get it back down to non-shooting out of the eye level.
Mm-hmm.
On a serious note, this is why they call it the silent killer, because I was totally asymptomatic. I had no idea. That my blood pressure was that high. I wasn't overly aggressive or anything. I wasn't prone to temper tantrums or wasn't any stress going on in my life really that much. I mean, I guess I have six kids, so maybe there's always some stress.
Yeah.
But fortunately, thankfully, I know people were praying, but also thankfully to modern medicine, the doctors were able to use their heads and get my blood pressure down to a much more acceptable 130 over 85, and so that's about where I'm hanging. But that kind of put a damper on a lot of my plans last year, Craig.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So other than that, so just recovering from that, making changes in diet, and trying to address that wherever I can. And I'm still on some beefy meds, but the doctors are happy with what they're seeing. So I was starting to feel better, and starting to really miss model railroading, too.
Really? Well, that's good.
Yes. So I forget why that started. You know what? I know why, because my wife was able to set up a quilting room in the house, and all of a sudden I remembered my train room, and I was like, man, that was some good old times in that train room. Sure enough, that started. I went to her, and I was like, I need a train room. And she's like, yes, you do. And we had talked about using the barn. And mm-hmm. that is basically still the plan, and so I'm starting to draw up some plans again. I don't really want a double-deck railroad because of the helixes, but I do want one because of what it allows me to do.
Mm.
But basically, the idea for right now is I'll design a single level and possibly expand out into the rest of the barn, maybe by using a modular system so that we can, like, if we're having a party in the barn, we can take some of the layout down. Maybe that's a possible idea.
Okay. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, exactly, because she was because she's like, well, why do you have to do double deck? Why can't you just use the rest of the barn and just do a modular setup? And I was like,
yeah, that's a pretty good day. Smart girl there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'll keep her. Who am I kidding? So.
Yeah, I know.
Trust
me, I've seen you.
Yeah.
Don't throw that one back.
Yeah, exactly. He's so right. So basically, I've been sitting back, sort of coming up with different phases of area that I'll have available more sooner than later. I'll probably build it in a couple of different phases, which is not all that different from what people do anyway.
Sure.
But it just depends on how much space we can get cleared out. That's, you know, Craig, the problem with having big barns is they attract a lot of stuff.
Oh, I know, yeah. I mean, not that I don't have a barn, but basically I have a, you know, a modestly sized house, and you would be amazed at the bunch of crap that's here. I'm like, how did all this get here? I mean, it just kind of happens. It's amazing. My wife is always talking about this. I see all these people in magazines and all that, and they have these homes, and everything's immaculate, and there's no clutter in them. She's like, how do they do that?
I don't know.
And I'm like, I don't know, because we've never been able to do that.
No, I fully sympathize with that, so definitely. I'm still going to model the same area.
Pennsylvania Reading Shoreline?
Yep, very good, yeah, okay. The PRSL, and because basically, you know, when we moved, all we did was we just moved basically 12 miles south, about the same exact different distance from the same exact line I was already modeling.
Okay.
So it still is basically the line that's in my backyard.
So
to speak. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of neat. All right.
Yeah. So it's in more reality, the tracks are about a mile and a half from here, but definitely close enough, maybe 2 miles, but close enough so that we can hear it when it goes through town. And, of course, definitely close enough that it's, you know, definitely is modeling something that's local and right in my area. So definitely looking forward.
That's neat.
Yeah. The only thing I might change is I might change, depending on what I decide to fit in and where. What I may do is have staging on one end, then two towns, and then staging on the other end, rather than having a point destination yard like I did before with Pavonia.
Okay.
Both towns that
I... Well, you've got the space for it.
So yeah, I do. So I'm still up in the air, but the two towns I definitely want to model are Woodbury and Glassboro. Glassboro is the closest town to here. Woodbury's a little bit further away, but both of those have some pretty interesting action going on. Both of those towns had small freight yards that would definitely allow for switching action, and both towns had lots of industry in them during their heyday. Glassboro, as you can imagine, made glass. Go figure.
Yep.
Woodbury.
Funny how that happened.
Woodbury was, yeah, exactly. Woodbury did not make wood, but there was a furniture factory. There was a soda factory, a few other industries, a piano factory.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I may not do towns like Westville, and my friend Rick is going to kill me for not doing his hometown. But my modeling preferences may change just because of where I am down the line now, just because of which towns I'm closer to are more. Westville was my hometown, but it's not anymore. Now Glassboro is more my hometown, so I'm more interested in giving that a priority.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. So, yeah, I drug out. So, Craig, I don't know how long it's been. Actually, I do know. It's been 4 years since I built a Switch, and I brought out that unbelievable mess of a three-way Switch.
I saw that.
Yeah, wasn't that? That's great. I'm like, I want to know how I made the mistake. See, that's...
Well, I'm not even sure. Was it really a mistake? But, I mean, for those of you who haven't seen it, Tim brought this picture out. And it's a very nice-looking turnout until you get there and you realize that the frogs aren't done. And it's just like, how did you even do that? How did you build this without actually building the frog points?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like... I can't even be. That's where you start.
Yeah, exactly.
And you didn't do that. I'm like, how did you even do that?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, I'm actually kind of impressed.
I actually was fiddling around with that tonight to see, okay, can I rescue this or do I have to start from the ground up? But
oh no, I'm sure you can rescue it.
Yeah,
I mean, you should. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
my hat's off to you. I mean, I just don't know how you did that. I don't think I could do that on a good day.
All I can say is that there must have been something in the water that night.
Your blood pressure must have been like pumping against your eyeball.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, Craig, what is going on with Mr. Biscayer in the Housatonic?
Eh, nothing.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's not entirely true. I mean, I have a lot of projects going on right now. Not much going on with the railroad itself. But last time we got together and we talked, which was the show that never was.
Yes.
Because for some reason it never actually came out. But we talked about it. And some of you have heard me on other podcasts like that. And you all know that I've kind of been really getting into the whole 3D printing thing for quite a while now. At that time, I think I had one printer. And now I have three. So they're growing like weeds around here. I'm actually having a lot of fun with it. It hasn't taken over my entire hobby, but it certainly has become a big part of it. Because one of the things I'm doing a lot with it is actually working on things for the railroad. Over the last year or so, I've actually designed at least six different car kits, which all can be 3D printed. I've designed, let's see, just real quick, a Michigan Central boxcar, a New York Central boxcar, a New Haven boxcar, another New York Central boxcar, a smaller one from the 1870s, and a Lehigh Valley boxcar. And on top of that, I also did a Lehigh Valley heavy-duty flat car.
Wow.
All of which are almost completely 3D printed. And so basically the way that, not to get into too much detail, but with the way that they're doing it, almost all of that was done on what they call a filament 3D printer, the ones that takes a spool of plastic and squishes it through a hot nozzle and then, you know, goes back and forth and builds up parts one layer at a time. All these models were done that way, with very fine tuning on the printer in order to get the best possible resolution, and I'm very, very proud of the way that they all came out. They've all, almost all of them, except for the Lehigh Valley one, have all been completed and painted, I'm really, really happy with the way that they worked. So that's one thing that I did. Another thing that I've been working on for the last, I don't know, about 2 months now, is I think people will probably remember, you know, you all know that I do early period, and one of the things that I've been wanting pretty much since I got into the hobby and started doing the 1890s is a more appropriate engine for the period.
Okay.
Very long story made short. Bachmann has a few very nice steam engines that they put out, but they're really, you know, basically 1910 type prototypes. So they're about 20 years too early for me. And the only other things that you can really get are like the old AHM and Bachmann Civil War era locomotives.
Okay.
And those have come along. Bachmann in the last couple of years has bought out their new technology, American 440, which has actually got the motor in the boiler compared to the old one that used to have a big motor and the tender. But I've really been lamenting the fact for years that I don't have an appropriate locomotive to run on my railroad. So I finally decided, after a couple of abortive attempts over the last few years, I said I finally have gotten the experience now with the 3D software to actually go ahead and start working on building my own 460 10-wheeler locomotive. It is a huge project, and what I'm doing in order to try to make it a little bit easier is I'm taking, because I've got about probably about 10 Bachmann 460s, which again are later than what I need, but the mechanisms, the motor and the drivers and a lot of the detail parts are all perfectly useful. So what I'm doing is I'm kind of blowing them up, and I'm stealing the power unit and the drivers and the steam chest and a few other parts and all like that, and I'm designing around them and 3D printing a new frame, a new boiler, a new cab, a bunch of other details, and I'm putting it all together. And I'm going to be having some of the items cast in metal, because the 3D printing stuff is too soft and too brittle to actually make real locomotives out of. I mean, you could make a locomotive shell for a diesel, that would be fine, but for a steam engine, you got to have, it's all that force going back and forth, and you know, there's a lot of things. I'm going to have them cast in metal, and basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all these sausiers that I have and turn them into silk purses. And so the project is going along. I'm being very, you know, hesitant. I don't want, you know, knock on wood. It's going along very well. And I'm about,
halfway done. I've got almost the entire engine designed. I've gotten about three or four iterations into the prints. The boiler looks good. The cab is good. The frame now actually fits, and I can put the Bachmann motor in it. And, you know, so all this stuff is coming along, and it's all going along very nicely. So, you know, hopefully within maybe by the end of the summer, I'll have it all set up, and I'll actually have actual Rogers prototype locomotives to run on my railroad.
That is really exciting. Now, how do you have to make any allowances in how you're designing it for, like, a decoder?
Decoder, not so much. Okay. Because all that stuff's in the tender. And I pretty much use the tender just as it is from the Bachmann. It's almost exactly the same tender. I think the trucks might be a little different. I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay.
But it is a little bit, it's probably about 5% oversized because of the clearances that I have in order to get the Bachmann motor unit into the locomotive. So it's a tiny bit oversized, but I've got the length correct, and I've got the drivers are about the same, and I actually shortened the locomotive by about 2 or 3 scale feet. So it's really coming along nicely. So, you know, it won't be perfect, but it'll be way better than what I currently have.
That's really exciting. So size-wise, how will that compare with some of your other locomotives? Will it be one of the bigger ones on your layout?
It will be one of the biggest ones on the layout. That being said, it will actually be, like I said, about 3 scale feet or about 10 millimeters shorter than one of the Bachmanns.
Okay.
So a little bit shorter. The real big difference that people will notice right off the bat is that it's got the same Rogers styling in that the rearmost driver, because there's 3 axles for drivers on the locomotive. The one that goes all the way in the back actually has the wheel set under the cab, which, okay, unlike the Baldwin that is the prototype for the Bach, that one, they're all 3 pretty closely spaced underneath the center of the boiler. So it's going to look very, very different from the Bachmann.
Okay, that's exciting, though. That's really exciting.
I am super excited about it, and it's been – I'm just having a ball with it. It's the amazing thing, and I don't want to talk too much about it because I could go on all night, and I'm not going to do that. But it's just – this 3D printing stuff is becoming such an amazing tool to do all kinds of modeling.
Yeah, and especially, you know, for an era that's can be as hard and as frustratingly hard to model in what you're modeling, you all of a sudden have these new venues open to you that 10 years ago you probably couldn't have even imagined.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, it's not even that. I mean, Jim Lincoln, friend of the show, who also recently has been, you know, letting me chat his ear off about these 3D printers for quite some time now, and I finally convinced him to go out and get one of his own. Well, he's actually modeled in O-scale and gotten these Coke machines, like a 1950s, 1960s Coke machine, he's actually got it printing on his resin printer, and you can actually read on the machine in embossed letters where it says Coca-Cola, you know, ice cold.
Wow.
It's the resolution on this is amazing. You wouldn't believe it unless you see it yourself.
Wow, it's
just incredible what you can do with these things.
That is really cool. Mm. Wow, that's awesome. That's great. All right. Well,
so that's what's been going on.
Yeah. Anything with the Amesville shops?
Well, I mean, depending on what happens with this locomotive, it may end up being a kit that may be able to sell, you know, the parts plus instructions on how to, you know, do this yourself and make your own Rogers 460 out of it.
That would be cool.
Yeah,
all right. All right. Cool. Let me save what we got. Model Railcasters will be back in just a sec.
Three, two, two, one.
Okay, Model Railcasters, we've got Jeff Adam. Craig, how long have you known Jeff for?
Too long.
Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. I don't know. It's been quite a while.
I think 2007. God.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
It was Cocoa Beach.
Was it? Is that where we met?
Yep.
Okay.
Same time when we met Lee.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how long I have known Lee Weiss.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How about that? Okay. So 2007.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. 2007, yeah. That's a long time.
A fair amount of time. So Jeff, were you into the business by that time? Was there a Motrec models in 07?
Oh, sure.
Motrec started in 2003.
Okay.
I wasn't doing structures then. I was just doing the freight car loads.
Okay. I see.
The first structure came out in 2007.
Yeah.
Remember that, Craig?
The little depot. Yeah. You remember it well.
What was that based off of, other than a little depot?
The prototype is a little depot in Minnesota, and I cannot remember the road name. It was a short line. Mm-hmm. But in 2007, that little depot was also my logo.
That's true.
How about that? Now, when you saw it, what was the process you went through of turning that into a model? Well, walk us through that, if you would.
Oh, that was easy. Brian did all the drawing and cutting for me. I have
okay,
a laser.
Okay, thanks very much.
It was Brian's idea. He's the one who came up with the design, drew it up, sent me the model. He said, "Build it. You're gonna recognize it." Sure enough, Blue Depot. It was all on Brian.
How about that?
Okay, we have him to blame for this. Okay.
So did he go out there with a measuring tape or something?
No, I think he did. He found a photo. The prototype is not up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he found a. I have the photo online. You just estimate.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's cool. So, Motrec models, Jeff, you've got to have some new stuff coming on. What's happening with Motrec models?
Since we last talked.
Yeah, since we last talked. Yes, since that last commercial break.
Wow, I could have had a baby in that commercial break.
You could have.
Well, you know, I mean, if I was a girl,
right. It's 2020. We're not judging. I mean,
that's right. That's true.
I can't know this. Well, since July, since the last podcast that never came out, I probably came out with at least 20 new kits.
Really?
Think about it. In four scale.
20 kits. So walk us through some of the stuff that you had come out with in that amount of time.
Inquiring minds want to know.
All right. I'm going to say roughly. It was the Sardines Fisherman's Shack.
Okay.
That was one of Best Train's kit. Since I bought... Oh, that's the other news, too. The Fisherman's Shack, you can buy it as a single pack or a double pack.
All right.
Then I came out with the Yard Shed, which is the same thing as my supply shed, the brick building.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of marlers wanted wood.
Ah. So
same size, same everything, just that it's clapboard instead of brick.
Okay.
Then I re-released the Little Depot, and I modified it. It doesn't come with a hydraulic platform anymore.
No, huh?
No, it comes with a wooden platform.
Oh, all right.
Board by board. Then, I gotta get the big list out now.
Open the vault doors.
Yeah.
Now, don't forget, now, these kids, I do them in, you know, two or three different scales.
Right.
So that's where the 20 came in. All right, so after that, Annie Sandwich Shop.
Okay.
That one was done in all four scales.
Oh, I think I can hear the 3D printer.
Yeah, but you probably can.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going, bleh, 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 bleh. That's all, folks.
All right, then I did in O-scale, the Wheat's Mills Freight House. That is a prototype for narrow gauge up in Maine.
Really? Okay.
And now I have to do one, and I have one guy order one at S scale.
Hmm.
I will bring that out in HO. I just haven't done it yet.
Okay.
Then I did the Valley Hardware Supply Company. That is the old, you guys remember, Northeastern scale models?
Oh, yeah.
Vaguely, yeah.
I purchased them last year.
You did?
Yeah, so those are my kits.
Okay, then.
There's 80. roughly. I think like 79 different hits.
I never knew they had that many.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know they had that many either.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to confuse the people. I did not buy New England, I mean, Northeastern Scale lumber.
No.
I bought the model, and I only bought the structure kits, not the freight car kits.
Okay. Good to know.
I don't know who bought the freight car kits. So then I came out with my first background building, and that is the Patterson Fire Hose Company.
Okay.
It's only 2 inches deep.
Very cool. That's definitely an area that could use some help as background buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've done that in HO, S, and O. And then now the last kit I just released is the Alton Fire Station. That was one of best trains, and that was actually a kit. Remember when Brian Nolan died?
I do, yeah, okay.
Remember the fire kit they came out with? Just the
That was a very nice kit.
Yeah, I released that, you get my newsletter, what was that, back in February? March?
I think so, yeah. March. You're assuming I actually pay attention.
All right, I'm trying to be nice now. All right.
Well, what good is that going to do?
All right. Now, do you remember the Biscar 2 company kit?
Yeah.
Remember the water tower?
Yeah.
I released the water tower.
No.
So many people were asking, can we just buy the water tower?
I do remember a lot of people did ask about it.
And I actually released that in all 4 scales.
Okay.
All right. I also came out with some O-scale laser cut detail parts, like exterior wall fans.
Oh, really? Okay.
Exterior J-vent. Those are the J-vents that are actually, they're upside down.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But the laser cut, you just glue the pieces together and put them on the building. I mean, they don't have the details, you know,
right.
But they just look nice.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That was, the little hiccup there. You said that was some new shingles that you came out with?
Yes. Diamonds, octagons.
All right, now I confess I haven't seen octagon shingles, but that just may be, that's just me being uncultured swine. That sounds pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I haven't gotten HO yet. That was done in O scale, and there is 5 inches exposure. It's the octagon.
Okay. That would be really great for doing Victorians. I mean, because they also had a lot of very ornamental shingles.
Well, at Victoria, isn't that more fish scale?
It can be, but they did a lot of different things.
If I do the fish scale,
right?
Then I came out with dog houses, picnic tables, workbenches, chairs, as detail items.
Okay.
And a lot of paint racks.
Yeah, I remember seeing the paint racks. That looked interesting. You actually sent me one a while back. It was really cool.
I sent you the one that goes, that one sits on a table, or you can hang it, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, the one you did the review on. Yeah, I've modified. I made a lot of paint racks with different kind of paint. Where the mates are hanging.
I made a lot of paint racks in my time.
You what?
I made a lot of paint racks in my time.
And of course, if you guys saw the last newsletter, I've been making now S-hooks for the medical field.
Yeah, I did. That's really actually really cool that you've been doing that. You should talk about that a little bit.
The S-hooks are for your face mask.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are complaining that the face mask, the type that goes around your ears.
Right.
Not the type that where you have to tie in the back. When you're wearing them all day long, they hurt your ears.
Sure.
And also, they are loose.
Yep.
So I made these little S hooks, or clips, you want to call them, where you can put the straps in the S hook, and it will sit behind your head. They won't even touch your ears.
Hmm.
And they will sit on your face a lot tighter.
Interesting.
Okay. So I've been handing them out here for free in Martinsville. The hospital, doctor's office, dentist's office, police department, fire department, and a bunch of nurses.
That's awesome.
That's really cool, dude.
But I have been selling them for out-of-staters. And right now, the Boston Generals got them. I've been shipping some to California, Arizona, Indiana, a bunch in Pennsylvania, a couple in New Jersey.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're on the website. I actually gave it a part number. It's like you get a 10-pack for $10, a 25-pack for $20, a 50-pack for $35, and a 100-pack for $60.
They got some good prices there, Mr. Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just trying to help out, you know, the community.
Yeah.
We have people here.
That's really cool.
We got people here that's been making face masks, and I got a bunch of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been actually making them too. One of the things that I used to do years ago before I got into model railroading is I used to do a lot of stuff for like science fiction and medieval cosplay. And so I've got my own sewing machine, and I've, you know, been making costumes and stuff for years. So when this came out, I did the same thing. I went out and I got a bunch of fabric, and I've probably made about 20 or 30 masks.
That's
awesome. I just got asked to do a bunch for a library system up in New York State. So I'm going to do a bunch of those with a friend of mine. So, yeah, no, it's great. I'd love to hear what the people are, you know, volunteering and helping do stuff in this time of, you know, desperate need. Because let's face it, you know, we're all sitting at home because we got this virus out there.
Yes, yeah.
So,
yeah. And I never knew you sewed until I read your one comment where you told that guy you made his wife's wedding gown.
I did, actually, years ago. I actually made a wedding gown.
Dang, Craig, that's awesome.
It was, actually. It was fun. Funny story behind that. I actually missed his bachelor party because I was finishing the dress.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like, what
you got ripped
do?
Off, dude.
I totally did.
Oh, so man. Since I'm the only one in this area that has a laser, and I've been making these S-flip, I actually got an interview with the newspaper.
Oh, neat.
I saw that on my Facebook page. And you know the magazine Cowcatcher? The railroad magazine, Cowcatcher, out of Texas?
Can't say that I do.
Oh, okay. Well, Tim interviewed me, so I'm in this month's magazine about it.
Oh, well, that's nice.
I have been using scrap acrylic to make these S-clips. Last week, I actually had to go to North Carolina to pick up a new sheet.
Hmm, okay.
4x8 sheets.
How many of those things do you get out of a sheet?
Out of a 12x24-inch sheet, I get 110 clips.
Wow.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
I have made over 2,000 clips so far.
Good for you. Round of applause.
And with a new laser, it cuts like butter.
Butter? Cuts like butter?
Cuts like butter.
Nice.
Actually, Jasonite. Oh, I love the new machine.
Oh, good.
That was the other bad thing that happened to me last year. My laser broke.
Oh.
I hate it when that happens.
That's why I'm behind. The laser started breaking down in November. By the time... Okay. December came around, it just broke. The
board.
Oh. No replacement part since my laser is from 2004.
Oh, and you can't get it anywhere?
No.
Wow.
The only way is to go out and buy a used whole laser. I'm not going to do that.
And that was because, yeah, I'm sorry, just a little hiccup there again, but you were saying the motherboard went out, so not worth replacing that part?
Not to buy a whole machine,
right.
But Epilogue wants me to send the motherboard in and see if they can fix it. They might have some piece parts.
Oh, well, let's list that.
It was something to do with the, it was not understanding the file when I send it.
Okay.
It was not reading the files.
Okay. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. So when I purchased Northeastern Skill models last June, I remembered that he had a laser there.
Ah.
So in January, or actually December, I sent him an email saying, hey, what are you doing with your laser? He goes, what, you want to buy it? And he knows that I didn't have the money, so he let me bought it, and I am making monthly payments for it.
Oh, well, that's good.
So I was there New Year's Day. No, January 2nd, I drove to Providence to pick the laser up.
Okay.
It's a learning curve. It took me over a month to learn it. Totally different.
Oh, it's a different laser, huh?
Totally different.
Ah.
The way you do your drawings and everything.
Really? That different?
So basically, I lost 2.5 months. That's why I am behind on orders.
Oh, I'm surprised it could be that different. Okay.
Yeah. The Epilogue laser was only a 40 watt.
Okay.
This is 90 watts.
Ooh.
Powerful. So you have to learn all the new settings.
Okay.
I have burnt so many things already.
Yes, I bet you have.
Right. And it's a bigger laser. It's a 16x24.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty decent. What did you have before? 12x18?
No, before it was a 12x24.
Oh. Oh, that's nice. Cool.
I have already put the Motrec logo on my cell phone. Engraved it?
That was bold. Especially the way you've been burning things in the big...
Well, yeah. This was just done like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just like, here we go.
Well, it doesn't. Your engraving doesn't. I'm going to do my laptop too.
I'm just like, I've got the settings a little wrong. Now I got three pieces of foam.
Well, don't
and it smells laser. Pretty bad.
My laser cannot cut metal.
Well, okay. So it doesn't mean it won't try.
So, now I am releasing a new kit this weekend. And if you read the newsletter, Mr. Bisgeier, I will be hosting a modeling contest.
Oh, I did see that, actually, yes.
Okay. Tim, are you still getting my newsletter?
I believe I am. I just am not. You know what? No, I'm not. You know why? Because it goes to my Model Railcast email, and that went away. So I need to get you a different email address to send that to.
Yeah, so I am I already designed the building. I'm going to cut it after the show tonight and build a pilot model. Basically, it is a transfer station.
Okay.
Where you could put it in between two sets of tracks.
Oh.
You know, one track and have a truck side. It is a old, do you remember the company Dynamodel Products?
Dynamodel, sure, yeah.
Model product, yeah. Those are mine, too.
I have a couple of their kits somewhere.
Yeah, those are mine, too. Mm. This is one of their kits. They called it, was the Freight Station number 100.
Really? Okay.
And I modified it. Because remember, back then, they didn't have a laser.
Sure, it probably was all stamped.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
I added a couple things to it. I added a shed on the side of the building.
Okay.
Hopefully, I'm going to announce it this weekend, and it's for a contest. You'll have a period, like 1 month,
okay,
to build it, to weather it, you know, do whatever you want. I am going to create a Facebook page just for this contest,
okay,
where you will submit your photos, and then I'm going to have my neighbors do the judging. They are non-railroad people.
Okay. And they're from, I can't say it, but they're from Virginia, so, you know. You know what I was going to say, but I can't say it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're very nice people.
Yeah, Anthony, he's a retired E8 from Master Sergeant from the Army, and a wife. They got two kids, a great family.
Okay.
And I have another family next to me. They will do the judging. So okay. Depending on which kit you buy, you know, either what scale, just say you bought the HO for $50.
Okay.
You will, first place will be $100 store credit.
That's awesome.
It's going to be double the kit price.
Okay.
Because I'm going to do it in all four scales.
Right.
Second place.
So if you want to get the big money, you got to make it a big model.
Well, yeah. And second place will be the kit value.
Okay.
And you just get a store credit that you'd use on the website.
Sure. Well, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sounds really cool.
That's
cool.
Hopefully, also by this weekend, I am going to catch up with the back orders.
Oh, that'd be good.
So I can ship them out next week.
Oh, especially now that you have your new laser working, that's good.
Right. Well, you see my newsletter. I always keep an update.
Sure.
Let everybody know. And when I was making the S-hooks, I got so many emails back saying positive things about the S-hooks. They're saying, this is more important. Hell with the models. This is more important. But at the same time, you're getting guys saying, hey, I'm home. I'm bored. I want my building. I want to build something.
Learn to scratch build.
Yeah.
Wait, no, don't do that. If people do that, then Jeff's not going to sell any kits.
Promise, that's the majority of the old skillers.
Yeah, well, that's mostly because they have to.
Yeah, and I am picking up more and more S-skill customers. I love it.
That's good. I mean, that makes sense because S is a craftsman scale, so,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. That definitely makes sense. And good to see them being represented, too. We don't want to forget our fellow S scalers.
Not at all.
Because, you know, like Doug, he doesn't do any S scale. Jimmy doesn't do any S scale. Brian doesn't do any S scale.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff doesn't do any F scale. So, yeah, there's not that many S scale manufacturers out there for structures.
There's not that many S scale modelers, so, yeah.
Yeah, what is it, 2%?
If that.
But I am picking up a bunch of new S-scalers.
Yeah, that's great.
Massachusetts to California.
Okay, then. You're not picking it up in that creepy van, right?
No, not in my free candy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Taking out the free candy van. Just to let the world know, I only have 7 left.
Okay.
out of 100 of the free candy van, the camper. Mm-hmm. Well, I call it the camper, so go online mm-hmm. if you want one. There's only 7 left. And 3 different
things. You heard it here, folks.
Railcasters, in our branch line piece, we wanted to talk a little bit about the steam locomotives in the air that Craig is modeling. He talked a little bit about his 10-wheeler. Craig, what kind of steam locomotives would one be running into in this particular area, and what makes them, you know, is there anything that makes them stand out from, say, another locomotive?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, of course, as in anything, the era makes a huge difference in terms of what you would see, and, of course, where in the country you are. So, of course, the answer is it depends, as it does with a great many things. But generally, in the 1890s, it's usually by this time that the American type, which is the 440, that would be the same kind that you saw at the Gold Spike and a lot of other early, you know, things, is a very early design for locomotives in the United States, a very popular design. It was probably the most popular design for probably about 30 years, maybe 20 years, I don't know. But for years and years, that was the most common type that you'd see. And then starting at about, I think, about the 1870s, late 1870s, you started seeing other types of locomotives coming around. You started seeing moguls, mostly for freight usually. Those were 260s, mm-hmm. so they'd have two pilot wheels, 6 drivers as opposed to the 4 drivers that you'd see on an American, and then no trailing truck at all. And those were one of the first things to come out after the Americans. They usually had smaller drivers, mm-hmm. Which generally on steam engines is a thing that you'd see. Passenger type locomotives usually had big drivers, so they'd be able to get higher speeds. Okay. Where freight locomotives usually had smaller and more wheels in order to have the traction. So that's something you'd see differences in terms of steam locomotives in the early period and even in the later period too.
Gotcha.
So you had moguls. Not too long after that, you also had consolidations, which was an even bigger locomotive, similar to a mogul in that it was a 280. So again, 2 wheels in the front, a pilot truck, and then you had 8 wheels, 4 on each side, coupled together as drivers, and then again, no trailing truck. And those were bigger still. One of the reasons that you kept getting these designs is that the locomotives were getting larger and larger.
Okay.
Americans were generally relatively small, but as these trains got bigger and cars got heavier and the trains got longer, you needed more and more power, which is why, and also the boiler technology was getting better, so they were able to hold more steam, they were able to generate more steam with coal instead of wood, so locomotives tended to get larger quickly through this period. So now you have the consolidations, those are starting to get popular right around 1880 or so. Again, a freight engine, smaller, many drivers. And then you also started to get for a more of a, I guess you could say, dual use. You started getting 10-wheelers, which were of configuration 460. And okay. that would be a 4-wheel truck in the front. And then 6 coupled drivers, 3 on each side. And then again, no trailing truck. And we'll get to the reason for that in a minute as far as a trailing truck goes.
Okay.
But the classification system that we're talking about with the numbers is called the White System, WHYTE, and that was how most locomotives were defined. There were a lot of similar locomotives, but they generally fell into these classes that were named for different things. So 10-wheelers were, as I said, a kind of a combination locomotive. They were good for passenger service, but also good for freight. They kind of had an intermediate driver size. But having the 4-wheel lead truck made it better for them for higher speeds.
Okay.
Because one of the things the pilot truck is there for is that, unlike in a model where it's just kind of along for the ride, on a real locomotive, it's actually sprung. And so it, as the locomotive comes into a curve, the lead truck is there to take that force and start turning the locomotive before the drivers actually start hitting the rail.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So then the thing is, what it's trying to do is it reduces wear on the drivers, and it also makes it safer because you don't get into a situation where the drivers are grinding against the wheel and with the possibility of jumping the track.
Gotcha.
So it was a safety thing. And also, they tended to run better as well. So that's one of the reasons why you had those trucks. In a freight locomotive, they generally ran slower, so they had a two-wheel lead truck. Passenger mm-hmm. locomotives tended to have four wheels in the front truck because it was more important okay. at higher speeds for them to be able to hold and stay centered on the rail. So that's the 10-wheelers, and they were a very useful engine. They were pretty popular. Like I said, they were dual use, so they were good for a lot of different things. But again, trains started getting heavier, started getting into around 1890, 1900, and you started getting into bigger locomotives still. And they were getting so big at this point that the fireboxes, which is where they would put in the coal, started getting very, very big. Okay. And they were getting so big, in fact, that the frame could no longer hold the weight. So what happened was you started getting locomotives with a trailing truck. Okay, so this would be a truck that would swivel underneath the firebox, but basically be used to hold up the firebox.
Okay.
For all the additional weight. And that's what it was for. So you started ending up with locomotives like Pacifics and Atlantics. Atlantics were 442s.
Okay.
Okay, so again, four-wheel lead truck, two on each side, four drivers, two on each side, and then a two-wheel trailing truck, which again was there to support the larger firebox. And again, this was happening because the locomotives were getting bigger and had higher pressure steam, and they could do more, but because of that, they had to be larger.
Okay.
Pacifics were a short time came after that, and they were another passenger-type locomotive, and a Pacific was a 462. So more power, more be able to, because you had two extra drive wheels as opposed to an Atlantic. Atlantics were real popular for about 5 years, maybe 10 years. And then they just were just eclipsed by Pacifics right away.
Right.
Because Pacifics were so much more powerful. They were much larger engines, and they generally had bigger tenders. They were faster. They had better range. So the Atlantics had a very quick heyday, and then they were gone. And on the freight side, you went from consolidations to locomotives like what was called a Mikado, which, strangely enough, was named, I believe, after a Gilbert and Sullivan play, is where that came from.
I always wondered where that came from. Okay.
Yeah, you know, there was a whole Chinese thing going on about that time, and I think, don't hold me to it, and I'm sure somebody's going to look it up and get back to us on it and tell me how wrong I am. and that's okay. Please do if I was wrong. But that was one thing that was kind of pretty big. The Mikado became a very, very large freight engine, and the wheel arrangement on that was a 2-8-2.
Okay.
Okay, so again, eight drive wheels, four on each side coupled, with a lead truck, two wheels, and a trailing truck, two wheels, again, to hold up that heavy firebox. Okay? Then you start getting into the more modern types. You know, you start getting into much, much bigger locomotives like right. Northerns and Niagaras and Mountains and other things right. like that. But that is kind of, you know, from about 1860 to probably about 1910. Those are locomotives that you'd see about through those times.
Right.
Now, on the Housatonic, which I'm modeling, there were only two types of locomotives. They had Americans and they had 10-wheelers. I model 1892, and by that time, the other locomotives were starting to show up on a lot of other railroads because consolidations were still relatively new, but we didn't have any.
Right.
Moguls were actually, and there's also a Prairie. I forgot to mention that one. A Prairie, I don't think they were terribly popular. I think they were more popular at West, but that was a 262.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
It was one of the first locomotives, like a small freight locomotive that had that trailing truck. But anyway, so other locomotives, other engines, you know, onto the railroads, they were very lots of 10-wheelers, lots of consolidations, lots of 10-wheelers. My railroad really only had Americans and 10-wheelers.
Okay.
So that's primarily what I'm modeling. I do have a couple of consolidations that I run as part of the New York and New England, which is a connecting railroad on my layout. But they're only used for that.
Okay, gotcha. So they wouldn't. That's the only time they're going to make an appearance on the railroad is when they're hauling for that. Then
that's correct. Right. Yeah, you would never. Then the Housatonic never had any. So.
No, with the 10-wheelers. So will you had mentioned it's dual purpose. So will you be using that for dual purpose on your railroad? Will we be seeing that hauling freight and passenger?
Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely used for that purpose. We, on the smaller trains, we generally tend if it's only two cars. which for my era actually was not a terrible sized local train. So if it was two cars, you know, plus maybe a mail car or a reefer or a milk car, we generally use an American for that. But anything more than that, we're going to use a 10-wheeler.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Craig, thanks so much for that. I really appreciate you going into that. I just thought with us mentioning that early on in the show, I'm like, you know what? It'd be nice just to have a little primer on that, a little breakdown of what's going on.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so now when you see Groton, you can, well, nobody's going outdoors and going to see a steam locomotive really easily anymore. But if you see a model, and you, now you'll have a fair idea of what it is and, you know, about what era it might have come from and why it's got the wheel arrangement that it does.
Right. That's great. All right. Thanks a lot, Craig.
Anytime, my friend.
So, you guys ever listen to HO Scale Customs?
Actually, I did for the first time a few weeks ago. Very interesting.
Oh, they're a bunch of great. I mean, if you're into structures, they're they're great. I met them at the Timoleon Train Show past in the fall.
Okay.
They're just a bunch of great. I've learned so much, you know, because people are posting every day about different kits and, you know.
Sure.
They're just great. I'm going to be on there sometime soon.
Cool.
Oh, good. Okay.
For my first time.
Well, tell them we said hi.
Yeah, please do.
Oh, you could just go on HO Steel Customs Facebook page and do it. Sign up.
No. I want you to tell them you said hi.
Uh-oh. No, but if you're into structure, learning, you know, Doug's on there a lot. You know, Doug Pascali.
Oh, Pascali, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's on there giving his scenery techniques, weathering.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great podcast.
So, Jeff, I'm dying to know, what is next for MoTrac Models?
Bankruptcy.
Yes.
Yeah, that's coming soon because a lot of people are going out of business around here.
Yeah, they are around here too, I know.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay afloat.
But seriously, what is coming next? Besides bankruptcy.
On the books, on the books right now is going to be that Modeling the Depot that's coming out. So I'm going to try to release this weekend.
Okay.
I'm also releasing the clam box that Best Train did.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Okay.
But I'm adding.
It's like a little shack, right? Or like a small store type of thing.
Actually, the billing looks like a clam box where you buy clams. They put in this or a Chinese takeout box.
Okay. All right.
How the wall goes up.
Yep. Okay.
On an angle. Yes.
That's kind of cute. All right.
So that's coming out. I'm almost done drawing my first true craftsman style kit in N scale.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Where you got to do board on board. You know, it's got multiple roof lines.
Okay.
And now people are saying, well, we want to see that in HO. And then, well, hold up. First, somehow more and more N scalers want to do craftsman kits.
That's interesting. I haven't seen a lot of that.
They want to do like FSM kits, but
right,
you know, George never made them in N scale.
Sure.
And Doug doesn't do N. Jimmy doesn't do N. So I'm going to try this. This is going to be a true craftsman style kit.
Okay.
Not just a structure kit. And then I am working. You guys ever heard of what is his last name? Craig.
Well, I know you're not talking about me. So
No. This guy, he's out of Georgia. He's relatively new into the hobby, but he's one hell of a modeler when it comes to scenery and weathering. He went to one Fine Scale Expo.
Okay.
It was in Albany last year. Well, I guess 2 years ago now. Yeah, in 2018. Mm-hmm. And he just picked it up, and he's a hell of a modeler. And we are coming out with a big kit. And he's going to build the pilot model.
Oh, nice.
That's cool.
I don't know how to do water. He does.
I know how to do meringue.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean,
I know Fred does.
Yeah, that's a long story.
You already mentioned it on the show before.
Oh, many times.
Yes, many, many times. So that kit's going to be out probably in the summertime. Because right now, Craig is actually building a kit for Foggy Mountain.
Okay, that's cool.
Other than that, I'm just going to be releasing a bunch of the DPM kits. Mm-hmm. Northeastern Steel model kits, a couple of my own, and of course, a couple of best kits, best frame kits.
All right. Sounds like you got a lot going on.
Yeah, but at the same time, I've been applying for jobs because people are not buying.
So oh, well.
I might have to go back into the workforce, but no one's hiring now.
Yeah, it's a little tough for that right at the moment.
Yeah,
that's true.
So Ronald Railcast, just buy some more of Jeff's stuff so he doesn't have to go to work.
That's right.
There will be a... When's Mother's Day? Next weekend?
Next weekend.
Yeah, so there will be a Mother's Day sale.
Okay. So don't buy anything until then.
No, for the contest, you got to buy the kit now.
Oh, you do? All right.
Yeah.
I'm actually half tempted to do that.
Yeah, that's a cool...
It's not going to be a big billing. It's only... Mm-hmm. I can tell you now, it is... The name of it is... McGurl Transfer Station.
Okay.
And so an HO, it's only, I get the measurements right here. All right, it looks like roughly 6.5 inches long by 3.3 inches wide.
Gotcha.
So you can sit between two tracks. I mean, the loading dock's on both sides.
Okay, gotcha.
You got fancy roof trim, and then there's a shed on the side of the building with comes with laser-cut steers. You don't have to build them. I like the old kit.
Yeah, I like the laser-cut steers. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, I have a project to do with Dave Emery.
Really? Yeah. My buddy Dave?
Yes, your buddy Dave.
What's he want then?
He wants me to do his stairs for those tanks.
Oh, are you going to do the spiral stairs?
Well, he doesn't want them spiral.
He doesn't want the spiral. No. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't want them spiral because I guess in real life they weren't spiral. He sent me the prototype photos and everything.
Yeah, he showed them to me, too. I mean, for people who don't know what we're talking about, Dave is working on a early period refinery type of thing, or fuel depot, I'm not sure. But he's got these old-style tanks that fairly large, you know. But, he showed them to me, and I'm like, you know, he had a bunch of these straight stairs, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look right. He's like, yeah, but that's what they had. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't look right.
Exactly like an L shape. It's like an L shape because there's a landing in the middle, something like that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but we all know, you know, every one of us is driven by a tank farm, and, you know, they go up the stairs that spiral around the tank. You know, it's what we're used to. So when you see something like that, it's like, that's not right.
Yeah.
I gave him a hard time over that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. He said, I asked him, I said, do you want laser cut railings or, you know, you're going to build it by pieces? He goes, no, please laser cut.
Yeah.
To save time. Yeah. Absolutely. He knows that I have a couple projects in front of that one. He said, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually started doing some stuff for him too. There's actually a thing called a cheese box still, which was apparently an early period type of thing that was used, I guess, to crack or break down crude oil into different types of useful things like kerosene, gasoline, whatever else like that. And it was relatively small, and it looks kind of like a small tank with a fairly tall brick foundation, probably maybe about 20 feet wide, you know, maybe about 12, 15 feet tall. So he showed it to me, and I'm like, you know, I could probably 3D print that. So I actually started just before my big 3D printer died. I had just printed off one of them, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this will probably work. And then, so now I'm in the process of the last month and a half, 2 months, I've been actually rebuilding it. And hopefully this weekend I'll finally get it back online, which would be great. So, but yeah, I'm supposed to print him out 2 or 3 of those things.
Yeah. And then I have one customer that wants the Northampton Passenger Station, that one of best trains, which is mine now, but he wants it longer.
Oh.
So.
That's okay, just take it and stretch it. You know what I mean?
Well, stretch it, but because he says it's close to a passenger station in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm adding domers. He wanted domers on top.
Domers?
Domers, yes. Yeah, so if anybody wants any special feelings, I could do that.
That's cool.
Or modified.
Excellent. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, as been mentioned before, you put out a newsletter. What's the best way for somebody interested to get signed up for that newsletter?
Oh, they could just send me their email address via Facebook or send me an email at info@motrekmodelsusa.com.
Mm-hmm. And that's Motrek with a K, no C.
No C. That's right.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, or you can just send it on Facebook, Right now, I send it up to 3,800 people.
That's a good following there, my friend.
That's not bad.
Oh, well, you guys know what I do at train shows. I have a clipboard. People yes. sign up.
Right.
Wind in the law, we'll find out.
Every time I do a newsletter, you always get a couple that bounces back because sometimes I can't read their writing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they change email address and notify me, or, you know, or the person died.
Right.
I do get emails.
That does happen. Yeah.
I get emails from the wife saying, I'm sorry, but he has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And I do have more paint rocks coming out.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Do those sell well, all those paint rocks?
Yep.
That's good. Okay.
Especially
good.
The medium float pro, the pan pastels.
Okay.
Pan pastel was actually Dave's idea.
Really? Okay.
We need a rack because everybody has them in drawers.
Right.
But he wanted one where you actually pull down a shelf and get what you want. But that, you know, figured that was a little hard to make, so I came out with this design. He said, this will work, and, you know, he has a couple of them.
Oh, that's good.
The one for Hunt and Line weathering stains.
Okay.
And, of course, my number one is my large Floqual paint rack, the one that holds 210 bottles.
No kidding. For Floqual, huh?
Yep.
I didn't think there were any Floqual bottles out there still. People must have gigantic collections.
If you want to buy any Floqual or poly scales, just head on over to narrowgaugemodeling.com. He has thousands of bottles.
Really?
Wow.
Now, that actually brings something up interesting that we should probably just touch on quick, and that is I recently heard, and I don't know if it's true, that I guess it's Rust-Oleum who owns them now, but they're going to be discontinuing a couple of wines like Pactra and, I think, Model Master and maybe
and
one.
Acropaint.
And Accupaint also?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, so that's something that's really, I mean, it doesn't really affect me because I tend to use craft paints anyway, but I know a lot of people really like using those enamels and other like that, and it's going to be a real problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you like those paints, go grab them now because you're not going to see them again.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the other paint rack I sell a lot, the one for craft paint.
Well, prepare to have the numbers go down on that because... Then again, if they're still buying them for Floqual, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
No, I said craft paints. I make a paint rack for craft.
No, I know. Yeah, you sent me the one for craft paints. I love it.
No. I have a new one now.
Oh, you have a new one now. Ooh.
The one that hangs on the wall.
Oh, okay.
That one's been selling very well, and now people are asking one to hold more than 100 bottles.
Really?
Yes.
Fascinating.
Everybody's using craft paints now.
Well, yeah, because they're expensive.
In the structures industry, not detailing engines. No, you don't.
Well, no, you probably don't want to use it to detail an engine, but you know. But for most things, it works just fine.
Yeah, and of course now you got that new line of paint, the AK MIG.
Yeah, I know a lot of my friends are really into that. I haven't even tried them yet. I you know, it's a whole new set of techniques, and I've seen people do some amazing things with them, but. You know, I don't know. I do just fine with the craft acrylics. I don't really see a need to, you know, go spend money on expensive stuff that does the same thing that the craft paints do.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you, you know, maybe you can do a little bit better job, but I'm happy with the results I get, you know.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I know people using them for structures.
Right.
Weathering structures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody using them for weathering engines or freight cars. I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah, no. I know Ralph DeBlasi and, what is it, Ralph Spice and a few other people are all using them.
Yeah.
I think, what is it, Brian Banna, I think, also. There's a lot of the really high-powered, you know, car guys who do car modeling are using that stuff. And, you know, I'm sure that they're really, really good painters, and I'm sure that they have their reasons. I mean, for me, it's just like, you know, that's great, but I don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm also not doing the kind of work that they're doing, so, I'm missing out for that reason. But, you know, I'm getting along. I can't complain.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, we got ourselves a show here.
We do. And maybe this time it'll be out before Christmas.
Yes, that's the plan. Actually, my plan is to make good use of this weekend. Well, tomorrow I'm going to be cleaning out the barn, but tomorrow night I hope to sit down and get some editing done. I'd love to push this and get this out by Monday or Tuesday, so we'll see.
All right, great.
Because people are asking for it on their webpage, on the Facebook page. I don't know if you read them.
Yeah, we do get over there every now and then.
Yeah, we do every once in a while. Yeah.
I'm on there. I mean, It's okay for me to announce on that page, right?
Of course.
Absolutely. No, it's Jeff.
Not like anybody's going to see it anyway. So.
No, you do get a lot of people on your page.
I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
We do get a lot of people. We really do appreciate it.
What is it? Dieter Zeka.
I'm waiting
for the next episode. And he said that he's waiting for the next episode. Then he put in parentheses.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been somebody who's been after us for a while. That's for good reason.
Yep.
But it's nice that Tim's finally back in good health.
Yay.
I don't have to get my podcast Jones with Mike Rose anymore, which is good.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the Model Railcast show. Thank you for being
here. Thank you for having me again.
Yes, well, you've been a great friend to the show. Yeah. I think Ryan Anderson even interviewed you.
Oh, sure. Many times, actually.
Yeah. I was on the 100th, the 200th.
That's right.
The first show was number 38 with
that's back in the days with Jay Smith and Will Airston.
Mine was 37 or 39. I can't remember. Yeah. It was the first time I was on.
Right.
I was
right.
on Rob Hinkle.
That's ancient history.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, Model Railcasters, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back again. I'm hoping to get the show back on nice solid ground. Craig, we'll get together. We'll figure out who's going to be on next. And one of these days, I'd love to get in. Bernie's been real busy. It'd be nice to catch up with
him. I know. Bernie just got his Master Model Railroader. I'd love to talk to him about that.
Congratulations,
Bernie.
Yeah, are you planning to do this weekly or monthly?
I'd like to do it by...
We'll do it semi-whenever-ly.
Yeah, there I go. If I'm in tip-top shape, I'd love to try to get back to getting at least two out a month. I think that's good. But, so, Jeff, thank you again for coming on. Craig, as always, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
You're very welcome, sir.
And Model Railcasters, we'll catch you in the next show.
And, of course, what we opened the show with, we closed the show with. The Model Railcast theme. Until next time, guys.
You've been listening to the Model Railcast Show. You can find us at www.modelrailcastshow.com or on Facebook at Friends of MRCS and look for us on iTunes. Don't miss your other great model railroading podcasts out there, The Scotty Mason Show, Model Rail Radio, A Modeler's Life, and the Model Railroad Hobbyist Podcast. And drop us a line if we miss mentioning you. This is Amy Perkins for the Model Railcast Show. Have a great week.